Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Double Jeopardy Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On June 9th, 2016, the Supreme Court decided Puerto Rico v. Sanchez Vail. Sanchez Vail was charged by Puerto Rico prosecutors with the illegal sale of weapons and ammunition without a license in violation of Puerto Rico law. While that charge was pending, he was indicted by a federal grand jury for the same offense, based on the same facts, under federal law. He pled guilty to the federal indictment, but sought dismissal of the Puerto Rico charges on double jeopardy grounds, arguing that Puerto Rico is not a separate sovereign. The Supreme Court of Puerto Rico agreed, but the Commonwealth appealed. The question before the U.S. Supreme Court was whether the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico and the federal government are separate sovereigns for purposes of the double jeopardy clause of the United States Constitution. By a vote of 6-2, the U.S. Supreme Court affirmed the judgment of the Supreme Court of Puerto Rico. Justice Kagan delivered the opinion of the court, which held that the Double Jeopardy Clause bars Puerto Rico and the United States from successively prosecuting a single person for the same conduct under equivalent criminal laws. The majority opinion was joined by the Chief Justice and Justices Kennedy, Ginsburg, and Alito. Justice Ginsburg filed a concurring opinion in which Justice Thomas joined. Justice Thomas filed an opinion concurring in part and concurring in the judgment. Justice Breyer filed a dissenting opinion in which Justice Sotomayor joined. To discuss the case, we have Lance Sorensen, who is the Olin Cyril Fellow in Constitutional Law at Stanford University. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Sorensen.
In this case, decided in June 2016, the court addressed the question of whether the Double Jeopardy Clause of the Fifth Amendment precludes the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico and the United States from successive prosecutions of an individual for the same criminal conduct. The case arose when the defendants illegally sold firearms to undercover police officers in Puerto Rico. Such conduct violated both Puerto Rican law and United States law. The defendants pled guilty to the federal charges and then sought to dismiss the Puerto Rican prosecution as a violation of the Double Jeopardy Clause. The Double Jeopardy Clause prohibits more than one prosecution for the same offense. However, there is an exception to the Double Jeopardy Clause. A person may be subject to successive prosecutions for the same conduct if such conduct violates the laws of separate sovereigns. The idea is that an individual commits two offenses, not just one, when he violates the laws of separate sovereigns who each have jurisdiction. Thus, in this case, the court was tasked with deciding whether Puerto Rico is a sovereign entity with respect to the dual sovereignty exception to the Double Jeopardy Clause. The answer to that question determines whether there can be successive prosecutions. The court held that Puerto Rico is not a separate sovereign for purposes of the dual sovereignty doctrine. Therefore, the Double Jeopardy Clause was properly invoked by the defendants, and Puerto Rico was barred from prosecuting them following their guilty plea in federal court. The major point of disagreement between the majority and the dissent was the appropriate test to apply to determine whether Puerto Rico is a sovereign. The majority, which consisted of Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Kennedy, Ginsburg, Alito, and Justice Kagan, who wrote the opinion, applied the ultimate source test. Under this test, the issue is whether the prosecutorial powers of the two jurisdictions have independent origins, or, conversely, whether they derive from the same ultimate source. The court thus frames the issue as a historical inquiry, looking back to examine from where Puerto Rico derives its prosecutorial powers. Applying this test, the majority found that, despite Puerto Rico's unique status as a constitutional commonwealth, with a large degree of autonomy, its prosecutorial powers ultimately derive from the United States Congress. Because Congress is the ultimate source of Puerto Rico's powers, the majority held Puerto Rico is not a separate sovereign, and the dual sovereignty exception did not apply. Thus, Puerto Rico is barred from prosecution. The majority acknowledged that this test has a narrow application to the Fifth Amendment and is different than more commonly used indicators of sovereignty. The dissent, consisting of Justices Breyer and Sotomayor, would apply a different test, one which would examine conceptual and perhaps more conventional aspects of sovereignty, such as local autonomy over the criminal code and the adoption of a constitution, as well as historical inquiry. I would add, although the court does not, that Puerto Rico's participation in Olympics under its own flag seems to suggest a degree of independence that exceeds that of the several states. The dissent does note the acknowledgement of the United Nations of the sovereign status of Puerto Rico. The dissent is interested not only in the source of Puerto Rico's prosecutorial powers, but to what degree Puerto Rico has become autonomous. In examining that question, the dissent finds that Puerto Rico occupies a political sphere analogous to the several states, with a local constitution and prosecutorial powers, and the dissent would find the dual sovereignty doctrine applies. The dissent, therefore, would allow Puerto Rico to prosecute the defendants even after their federal prosecutions. The majority and the dissent, then, apply different tests for determining sovereignty. The court's decision that Puerto Rico does not have a separate sovereign identity from the United States for purposes of the Fifth Amendment is straightforward on its surface. However, there is some complexity to the opinion which has legal and perhaps political ramifications. The complexity arises from the unique and somewhat vague status occupied by territories within the U.S. constitutional structure in general, and the case of Puerto Rico in particular. Congress has plenary power over the administration of territories under Article 4 of the Constitution. From the Northwest Ordinance throughout much of the 19th century, territorial status served mainly as a prelude to statehood, even if a long prelude for some. Territories obtained at the height of the United States imperialism in the 1890s followed different trajectories. Hawaii, for example, obtained statehood after a lengthy territorial period. The Philippines obtained independent nationhood. Puerto Rico, however, became a commonwealth in 1950 with its own constitution, governor, and republican form of government. The majority opinion in this case suggests that, for purposes of the Fifth Amendment, Puerto Rico must fall within one of two categories, either the equivalent of a state or the equivalent of a territory, and it decided on the latter. The dissent would recognize the constitutional commonwealth of Puerto Rico as a third kind of entity, one that derives its prosecutorial power from its own constitution and own sovereignty, similar to states but not equal because it does not have representation in the national government. Part of the disagreement arises from the majority's framing of the ultimate source doctrine as a historical inquiry. What is the historical ultimate source of Puerto Rico's sovereignty, which the majority finds to be the U.S. Congress, whereas the dissent frames it as a present tense inquiry. What is the present ultimate source of sovereignty, which the dissent would find to be the people of Puerto Rico? Perhaps a simpler way of framing the question would be to ask whether Puerto Rico's sovereign powers could be constitutionally revoked by Congress today. Could its commonwealth status be revoked or otherwise altered? The majority argues that Puerto Rico's constitution came into existence only with the blessing and some modifications of Congress. The dissent points out that the same argument could be made of all the states that were admitted after 1787, and yet we recognize the sovereignty of those states. The majority responds that new states to the Union have been admitted on equal footing with existing ones, and part of that equal footing is to enjoy the same sovereignty as the original 13. The majority's response here is, I think, weak because it does not relate to the ultimate source doctrine. Ultimately, Congress has power to allow states into the Union or not. States derive their existence from the blessing of Congress. This exchange, however, is important because it demonstrates the majority's refusal to consider full sovereignty for political subdivisions of the United States that are not states. According to the majority, full sovereignty is only achieved through statehood. I find it interesting that the majority, the dissent, and Justice Thomas in concurrence all raise a separate issue, that of Native American sovereignty. It is raised as a point of contrast with Puerto Rico. That is, Native Americans have aboriginal, or in the court's language, primeval sovereignty, which predated the formation of the United States. This would mean the dual sovereignty exception to the Double Jeopardy Clause could be invoked in the Native American context, and indeed has been invoked successfully. However, both the majority and the dissent seem to suggest that Congress has the power to curtail Native American sovereignty, including the power to prosecute. Justice Thomas points out this seeming contradiction in this case and by reference to his more detailed objections to the court's jurisprudence in this area in the United States versus Lara case of 2004. Perhaps the most interesting issue in this case is raised by Justice Ginsburg in her concurrence, which is, why is there a dual sovereignty exception to double jeopardy at all? Does it serve a purpose important enough to sacrifice the right to be free of two prosecutions for the same underlying conduct? She invites the court to re-examine that issue in a future case.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.